podcast on ESPNCoastal.com.
Good to have you along here on Three and Out on this Tuesday. Kevin, BJ, and Ben, glad to have you along here on the Southern Pigskin Radio Network. We're streaming live as well at ESPNCoastal.com and on Facebook and Twitter. Joining us here from Pro Football Focus, Anthony Trey steps in here on Three and Out. Anthony, welcome to the show. How are you? Doing fantastic. We come down the stretch here of the college football season. Obviously, folks are looking at their options in terms of the National Football League, but per you, Mac Jones might be one of the best in terms of his grade out in all of his starts. 79.4 in Week 12 against Kentucky, and I think, what, only 15% of quarterbacks in the FBS with four starts have even reached that in half of their games they've played. Mac Jones has done it in every game he's played there with Alabama. What, in your estimation, makes him so special, and might he be climbing up some draft boards here?
And Mac Jones clearly has. I mean, he's been one of the most accurate quarterbacks in college football this year, limiting those negatively graded throws. We're not seeing a high rate of quarterback fault incompletions throughout the duration of the entire season. And like you said, I mean, the guy, his worst game is a 79.4 PFF grade for most quarterbacks. That would be a pretty good day, but that is his worst day so far this season, and that's quite impressive what we've seen from him. Pretty much, I would say, next to Zach Wilson for the biggest surprise at the quarterback position this year. But yeah, he's definitely climbing up those draft boards. I think the biggest concern with him in that regard is his arm strength. But really, I mean, that's the last thing you kind of want in a quarterback. You want the accuracy more than anything. It's the cherry on top of a quarterback prospect. And I think I would call him kind of one of those fringe first-round guys with Kyle Trask of Florida. You know, I would throw, you know, obviously Trevor Lawrence, Justin Fields, they're locked in their first round, first two picks of the 2021 NFL draft, and then Zach Wilson and Trey Lance after. But I think with the demand for quarterbacks this year, we will probably see the 1983 record tied for the most quarterbacks taken in the first round. And I really do think if Kyle Trask and Mac Jones can sustain this level of play that we've seen from them, and it looks like they are, then I think we will see that.
Mac Jones, how does his draft profile compare to that of his predecessors, Tua Tagovailoa?
Yeah, he's not quite on Tua level. From a college production standpoint, he's actually performing better than Tua is. I mean, he's performing better than any Alabama quarterback, and quite frankly, you know, after Joe Burrow, better than any SEC quarterback we've ever seen. You know, he's not even remotely close to that Joe Burrow-esque level from, you know, an NFL prospect evaluation standpoint. But he's not quite on that Tua level. But still, he's still, like I said, made his way into that first-round conversation. But from a prospect standpoint, we wouldn't be comfortable, you know, taking him in the top five like Tua was.
And, Anthony, when you look at the fact that a guy like Mac Jones is always going to be like, okay, he's a good player, but look at the type of guys you got around him. Devonta Smith, obviously, you know, losing Jalen Waddle, having a guy like Najee Harris. I mean, when you be talking about late first, early second, he's still going to be looked upon to be a franchise quarterback at a certain point, because second-round quarterbacks eventually become starters at certain points.
Yeah, I mean, that's the biggest thing, too. And, you know, when we're looking at, you know, the Heisman conversation, this has been a big kind of thing that PFF has disagreed with more than anything, you know, is because most people are looking at the Heisman race in Alabama and just saying, well, I mean, honestly, if we're taking quarterbacks out of the conversation, Devonta Smith's up there, and I absolutely 100% agree. I think he should be one of the finalists at this point in time, even though he's not a quarterback. But most people are actually putting Najee Harris above him, Mac Jones. And, you know, it just goes to show how talented this offense is at Alabama. You know, all the weapons he has. He doesn't have Jalen Waddle anymore, but John Metchie is developing into an incredible wide receiver. You know, what Sark has been doing with this offense has been very favorable, probably one of the best situations a quarterback could possibly be in. But, you know, like I said, at the end of the day, when you look at what Mac Jones is doing, what the areas he can control, like we here at PFF like to look at a quarterback's negatively graded and positively graded throw rate. And those positively graded throws can sometimes be, you know, influenced by, you know, scheme and supporting cast. But those negatively graded throws, that is 100% on the quarterback. And no one has been better in the Power 5 this season than Mac Jones in that category.
Anthony Trace joining us here on 3 and Out. You look at the quarterbacks, how do you kind of rank them at this point heading down the stretch? I know Ohio State may not play as many games as Clemson and some others, but where do you see the quarterback situation as you see it coming down the stretch of the regular season?
Ooh, from a draft perspective, or just solely based on, you know, the Heisman conversation?
From just looking ahead to their NFL, has anything changed with the big board in your estimation, draft wise?
Oh, 100%, especially this season. You know, before the year, you know, we were talking maybe Trey Lance could challenge Justin Fields for that number two spot. But at this point in time, he's probably dropped down to the fourth spot. That one showcase game he had, you saw the athleticism on the ground. I mean, the dude was dangerous with his legs. You see all the physical tools, but the accuracy in the passing he displayed in that game was not good at all whatsoever. And then Zach Wilson, on the other hand, that guy has been week in and week out absolutely phenomenal. I mean, you know, he's one of our highest graded quarterbacks of the season. You know, I mentioned Mac Jones is the only quarterback with a grade above 79.0 in every single game this season. But at the same time, Zach Wilson's getting ready to set the PFF passing grade record this season. Because right now he's at a 95.1. He's got a couple of games left to play. Hopefully we see, you know, him play three more games instead of two more games. Hopefully we get maybe a possible Cincinnati matchup in on December 5th. That would be absolutely incredible. Well, I guess that time's already kind of passed, but, you know, I really wish we would get a game like that. But anyway, Zach Wilson has definitely gotten himself to that quarterback three spot. You know, whether he's inside of structure, off structure, he's making plays left and right. You know, you can definitely see the arm talent there at the position. So that's definitely where the big shakeup has kind of been. And, of course, Kyle Trask, too. You know, he's up there, too, with Wilson and Jones for one of the biggest surprises of the season, just because last year, you know, honestly, he was probably five or six dropped interceptions away, and we'd probably be seeing Felipe Franks out there instead of Kyle Trask. You know, he got extremely, extremely lucky. One of the luckiest seasons we've ever seen, you know, from a quarterback perspective, because there were a lot of dropped interceptions, a lot of turnover-worthy throws from Kyle Trask. You know, earlier this year, you know, he did look better. You know, he's had a little bit of playmaking to his game. You know, he wasn't so much of a statue inside of the pocket. You know, he started to maneuver around exceptionally well, keep his eyes downfield under pressure. But at the same time, that early production in the year, you could definitely tell it was pretty much because of his supporting cast on underneath throws and Dan Mullen, you know, scheming up and creating open short throws for Kyle Trask to deliver, and the receivers ran after the catch for an explosive play. But over the last four or five games, the guy has looked like a completely different quarterback. I mean, his ball placement downfield has been absolutely exceptional. You know, he's still getting helped out to a certain degree, you know, by the scheme and the supporting cast, but the level of difficulty of throws is definitely increasing. And from, you know, an NFL, you know, evaluation standpoint, this is where I kind of get a little concerned with Kyle Trask, as great as he has played over these last few games, is that they kind of took away those, you know, those difficult reads and throws over the middle of the field. We saw him try to attempt those last year, and that's where we saw a majority of those turnover-worthy throws. Those have kind of disappeared this year because they're not really, you know, putting them in the playbook. And so that's the one area of concern I kind of have with Kyle Trask. But there's no doubt that he's, like I said, he's played his way into that quarterback five or six range. And I think, you know, at this point in time, that top four is pretty much set in stone. And I think it's interesting, too. I mean, just imagine if Trevor Lawrence opted out this season, you know, with the way Justin Fields started out those first three games, didn't really look too hot against Indiana. But those first three games was one of the best three games stretches we've ever seen here in the PFF college era. I thought, you know, well, we wouldn't think this. We would have been sided with Trevor Lawrence one all the way. But I think there would have been a lot of people thinking, man, maybe Justin Fields is the number one overall pick. But anyway, at the end of the day, for us, it's Trevor Lawrence, Justin Fields, Zach Wilson, Trey Lance. And then in that fifth and sixth range, you kind of get into, you know, that Mac Jones, Kyle Trask area. And then after that, you know, Jamie Newman's a guy that I'm very intrigued with. He was supposed to play at Georgia, of course, but opted out, decided to focus on the 2021 NFL draft. But I think he's going to be, you know, I think he could end up being a steal, you know, in that late day two type of range.
Not long ago with quarterbacks, 300-yard passing games were a bit of an outlier. And you could sort of separate great quarterbacks from good quarterbacks with, you know, statistical measures like yardage totals, touchdowns. Now you have guys that throw for 400 or 500 yards one Saturday. You have, you know, 3-4 quarterbacks in a conference with 35-40 touchdowns in a season. Has that changed the evaluation at the next level? And kind of what stats are – buzzworthy, so to speak, for NFL administrators right now when evaluating quarterbacks?
Yeah, I mean, you know, speaking for working for PFF, I'm a little biased when I say this, but I really do think, you know, PFF grade does a good job of encapsulating this. You know, the prime example that comes to mind is LSU this season with TJ Finley. You know, after Miles Brandt went down with an injury, he started that very first game. And, you know, the box score stats looked absolutely incredible. He had a passer rating right around 130, but his passing grade was sub 60. It wasn't all that great. And that kind of gives you the illusion that, you know, it was more of everyone else in the ecosystem he was in as opposed to him itself. And, you know, when I mentioned Kyle Trask earlier on in the season, that is another kind of good example, because you saw, you know, in that Texas A&M game, they lost, but he still threw for 300 yards, four touchdowns, no interceptions, almost 10 yards per attempt, completed over 70% of his passes, but he had a PFF grade of 54.2. But then, like I said, after that, the dude's been lights out, one of the highest grade quarterbacks in college football with the elite game after elite game. So I think, you know, PFF grade does a good job of showcasing, you know, was it the quarterback, you know, was he making those big time throws downfield, or was that a lot of that production coming after the catch, you know, was it schemed for him? You know, going back to what I said with the positive graded and negatively graded throws, you know, everyone, you know, positive graded isn't always 100% solely on, you know, the environment they're in. You know, a lot of times it can be from the quarterback, but, you know, it's dialing into those negatives. You know, are they limiting those? Are they limiting those, you know, turnover-worthy throws? Because, you know, that turnover-worthy throws that we'd like to, you know, say a lot, and a lot of people saying, you know, well, it didn't happen, it doesn't matter. But at the end of the day, you know, if the, you know, the linebacker or the cornerback does their job properly and just catches the ball like they should have, I mean, that's an interception where it's a completely different ball game. And so we still kind of incorporate that to the grading. So I think PFF grade, passing grade, that is a good thing to kind of look at when evaluating these guys, but not something to, I mean, completely 100% rely on just because, you know, a guy may be one of the higher graded quarterbacks in college football. You know, like Grayson McCall of Coastal Carolina, he's playing exceptional this year, one of the 10 highest graded quarterbacks, but that doesn't mean they're talking about him as an NFL draft prospect thing. But I do think, you know, it's probably the best thing we have from a statistical measure standpoint.
Anthony Trace, Pro Football Focus, our guest here on 3 and Out. Anthony, we appreciate the time. Thanks so much.
Of course. Thanks for having me. Hey,
we appreciate him joining us. We'll come back. Ben, I'll let you hop in there. We were just up against it. We'll come back with more 3 and Out all across the Southern Pigskin Radio Network.
BJ, Ben, and Kevin. BJ, Ben, and Kevin. The 3 and Out podcast on ESPNCoastal.com.
The computer has never, ever been wrong.
All the music on today's podcast is produced by Curriculum Global. If you want to check out more of their music, follow them on Instagram. That's Q-U-R-R-I-C-U-L-U-M Global on Instagram. Curriculum is a record label based out of Atlanta that supports and funds students to help them pursue a career in music. We're really excited to partner up with them on this project. Now back to the show.
Good to have you along here on this Tuesday. Kevin Thomas, BJ Bennett, Ben Troop, thanks for making us a part of your days. We're streaming live at ESPNCoastal.com, live on Facebook and Twitter, and all across the Southern Pigskin Radio Network. South Carolina going through a coaching transition, and joining us here on the show to help us break all that down, co-host of the JB and Goldwater Show, Jamie Bradford, joins us here on 3 and Out. Jamie, welcome to the show. How are you?
I'm fine, BJ, Ben, Kevin. How y'all doing?
Hey, we're doing fantastic. Obviously, a lot of transition there at South Carolina. How much we saw them play Georgia last week. How much has this program kind of suffered the last couple weeks? Will Muschamp fired? And then you had a couple of players obviously opt out the rest of the season. What's the dynamic here before they even begin to start for a coaching search with this team the rest of the way?
Well, you know, honestly, it's probably not as bad as some think. You know, I've got quite a few sources up there with the program, and Mike Bobo's done a tremendous job over the last couple of weeks in really trying to find the guys who want to play, who are invested in playing for the Gamecocks, and to, you know, put them on the field, and they're all giving it the best shot, you know, giving it their best shot, basically, down the stretch here. And obviously they got the final game of the year against Kentucky coming up this weekend. You know, they've been harping the last couple of weeks. It was interesting, his initial press conference, he said it, and so did Connor Shaw, that they were looking for guys who were really more concerned about the name on the front of the jersey than the name on the back. And, And I think they found as many of those guys as they could find. They've got a bunch of injuries, but, you know, there's been a lot of folks focusing on some of the negative. Some of the positive in this program right now, you know, Sadarius Hutcherson and Shai Smith, these guys are going to the NFL. Shai Smith, one of the best wide receivers in the SEC, he's been in concussion protocol for the last week and a half, and he's in day 3 of 5 right now. He's trying to get healthy so he can play his final game in a Carolina uniform. You know, so there's still good – there's still guys like that with a good head on their shoulders trying to finish out the season the right way, and we'll see what happens come this weekend.
I guess before getting to who some possible candidates are, do you think the firing was the right call at this point in time for a Muschamp in South Carolina?
Well, you know, it was tough. That was tough because obviously some of the guys that opted out and even pretty much every player on the team, you know, they very much so support Coach Muschamp. Nobody wanted to see him go as far as from the player standpoint of things. So that was very difficult. Coach Tanner had a really tough change coming there. That was a difficult decision that he had to make. You go back to when they beat Auburn, right? And it kind of puts you in the same position that they were in last year after upsetting Georgia. Last year they upset the Dogs in Athens, and they're 3-3 on the season. And then they literally just tumbled from there. They had one more win the rest of the way home, and that was against Vanderbilt. This year they get the 2-2 off of consecutive wins up there in Nashville, and then beating Auburn at Williams-Brice Stadium. And you think once again, okay, well maybe they're headed in the right direction. They go down to Baton Rouge, they get blasted by a bad LSU team, then they get blown out by coming off of an off week against A&M at home, and then you go to Oxford and your defense just was non-existent. I mean, it was trending in a terrible direction. Coach Muschamp had lost a lot of the fan base and I think some in the administration too. And so Coach Tanner had a tough call to make, but he felt like that was the right time to do it. And they're in a different spot than where they were 5 years ago as far as candidates go. There's some very qualified candidates out there, and all of them have something a little bit different. I can tell you, based on, you know, the information that I have and have been privileged to have over the last couple of weeks, that right now Shane Beamer is probably the name to really keep an eye on, I'd say, over the next 6 or 7 days. But you don't really necessarily want to cross anybody else off the list just yet because Coach Tanner's being very thorough in this search. He's making sure that he checks all the boxes, and he's going to make sure that he hires the best candidate for this job at South Carolina. And that's been the most important part of this search, is finding the guy that fits the South Carolina job the best.
And, Jamie, I did hear reports that Shane Beamer really, really impressed when you talk about the interview process. But coaching in South Carolina is different now. I mean, back when I was coming out, I mean, I got recruited by Lou Holtz. I mean, I saw Steve Spurrier go 11-2, 3 straight years. But it's a different barometer because, one, you got to compete in the East, but you got to beat Clemson. I know that Shane Beamer right now is the front runner. But what makes coaching at South Carolina so difficult outside of the fact that you got these Clemson boys that's on the rise right now?
Hey, you know, Ben, you know it as well as anybody, right? Yeah, absolutely. It's a different job. You obviously have to be able to recruit the state well, and you have to be able to recruit the immediate areas surrounding the state, like Atlanta and like Charlotte, and then you got to be able to get into some hotbeds that you probably know quite well down in the state of Florida, even down in South Florida and up there in the Delmarva area, places like that. Even over the last, I'd say, 7 or 8 years, Carolina has stretched out into Alabama and Tennessee and places like that and pulled some players. So obviously, you know, this job is a little bit more of a difficult job than some of the established programs that surround it, like Clemson just up the road, and what Coach Sweeney has been able to do up there. But you said something that is spot on. You know, this is a different job than it was probably when you were being recruited, or definitely when you were being recruited, and even about 10 years ago. You know, a close friend of mine who's on our program today, he's a 10-year NFL veteran, Pat DeMarco, and we had this exact conversation. And you know, when Pat and that group of guys, that whole 4 or 5 year period when they were signing all these big time players, the Clowneys and the Gilmores and the Alshons and the Lattimores and all these guys, you know, they didn't have what they have now. And what you have at South Carolina now, Pat said today, look, I've been in and out of a ton of NFL facilities, and what they've got in Columbia competes with all of them. And for that matter, of course, around the rest of the SEC. I mean, the Gamecock job is different than it used to be. It's still a difficult job, but you have more to offer and you have more to sell recruits and prospects on and their families and things like that. When you come to Columbia, Ben, you know, I know that you spent some time there playing with the Gators. it's not like it used to be. You don't pull up to Williams-Brice Stadium and see cars parked underneath the stadium. I mean, it's nice. It's brick. The facilities that the players use are unbelievable. The stadium's different in itself with the suites and all that. It feels like a big-time SEC program. So there's much more to offer. And I think what's been important about this search is finding somebody that understands where Carolina used to be, where they are, and where they want to go, trying to piece all that together. And I think that's one of the main reasons, based on the information I have, that Shane Beamer has kind of emerged as a candidate, maybe a leading candidate right now in this search, because he did spend time there. He was one of those that helped kind of architect that run under Coach Spurrier. And he's a guy, obviously, with a ton of experience with some of the best minds in the history of the sport, you know, like his father and Kirby Smart, and now Lincoln Riley and Coach Spurrier and Phil Fulmer and guys like that. And so all that has kind of helped maybe elevate him to the top, even with the lack of coaching or head coaching experience.
So that being said, what is the realistic expectation? I know people were getting frustrated with Muschamp. He played one of the nation's toughest schedules last year. What is a realistic expectation to keep a guy more than 3 or 4 years without the seat getting just explosively hot?
Yeah, you know, that's a great question. And I think it's a difficult question to answer, because the expectation now at South Carolina is to do what Steve Spurrier did. I mean, once you've seen it, you want it again. You know what I mean? It's like if you've never had apple pie before, and then somebody gives you apple pie, you're like, damn, that's good. I'd like to have that. I'd like to have more of that. You know, Carolina kind of had their couple of slices of apple pie back in that run where Coach Spurrier, you know, won 42 games in 4 years with the Eastern Division Championship. And now, you know, I think that's part of the reason why this change was made 4.5 years in for Coach Muschamp, is because the expectations were raised at South Carolina. Now, you know, I've said a couple of things on our program over the last couple of weeks that some people laugh at and some people get. You know, my family, we've been around Gamecock athletics our whole lives. So, you know, when I say it, they don't really laugh at it. But for people who've only been around for a decade or so, they more chuckle. But you know, you need to find a guy that truly believes that you can win a championship. And, you know, is it realistic to expect South Carolina to win the SEC every year? No, I think there's only one program that realistically can expect to do that, and that's Alabama. Maybe Florida again, but certainly right now it's Alabama. And so, but you need to have a guy that believes that you can do that. And the best example is right up the road in Clemson. And I don't know if y'all remember, but back, you know, when Dabo was hired after they beat the Gamecocks in 08, when he was hired permanently, you know, over the last decade or so, so many people have laughed, not just in the state of South Carolina, but across the country. They see these Dabo quotes run across TV, you know, these bring your own guts. And they beat LSU back in 2013. I think it might have been the Citrus Bowl. And he stood there in the middle of the field and told everybody they beat a championship team and we're a championship program. And he kept saying all these things that we looked at and we're like, what are you talking about? You haven't won anything. You're not a championship program. You're not a national championship program. But there was one person that believed that, and that was Dabo Swinney. And he was able to build a culture around that, and people were able to, you know, they wanted to be a part of it. Players wanted to be a part of it. Coaches wanted to be a part of it. Fans bought into it. The boosters invested in the program because Dabo truly convinced people that Clemson was going to be one of the championship programs in college football. And look where they are. They might win another one this year. And so who is that guy? Who is that guy that truly believes that? Now, does believing that make it come true? No, obviously not. But if there's a guy that believes that that can happen, that's the guy, obviously, and is qualified for the job. You know, that's the type of guy that you want to run the show in Columbia. And, you know, that's a feather in the cap for Shane. But let's remember, there's a bunch of great candidates still involved in this thing. I mean, Scott Satterfield's name has not gone away for good reason. Neither is Billy Napier's. I mean, there's some really, really quality type guys out there. I think you'd do an excellent job at South Carolina. And I think they're all championship coaches and people.
Let me ask you this, Jamie. I've seen a lot of just people that I follow say Billy Napier would be their pick. If it is Beamer, how would the fan base respond? Would that be, not that it necessarily matters a ton, but would that be a welcomed addition to the program?
Well, I think so. So I think right now, if you ask 6 out of 10 Carolina fans, they'd say, bring on Shane Beamer. The other 4 would probably be very vocal in saying no. But the thing about Shane will win the press conference. Shane will win the press conference, and that's what will be very important here. Now, obviously, they want to win games, right? You're not hiring somebody to win the press conference. But to change the perception of the hire from some of those to maybe not not necessarily believe that Shane is the right guy, at least initially. You're going to have to win the press conference. But also, what Shane brings into this program with him, that would help change the image of him as the hire for those that right now don't necessarily believe in it. There's a lot of really interesting names floating around out there of coaches who would probably come with him to South Carolina. There are some coaches on this staff who more than likely would probably stay involved, and they need to, because Will Muschamp, he did miss in his time at Carolina on some coordinators. I think right now defensive coordinator T-Rob, as great of a guy he is, it's been a disaster. And honestly, had Muschamp had Mike Bobo the whole time, he'd probably still be there. But outside of that, he's actually made some really good hires, some names that have been around a long time. And, you know, Tracy Rocker's coaching the defensive line. This guy has been around forever. He's one of the best defensive line coaches in the country. Look at Kevin Harris. He's the third leading rusher in the nation right now. He's leading the SEC, and Des Kitchings has been brilliant with him and the rest of that tailback room. And Mike Bobo has done the best job that he possibly could calling plays with what he's got. And they've got some other guys. I mean, Connor Shaw obviously is on the field right now. You want to keep him in the program. They're really high on Rod Wilson, who's been coaching outside linebackers, who came back in, you know, former Gamecock. He was with the Chiefs, and they won the Super Bowl last year. So they got some really good names in the program. There's some big names out there that Shane would probably need to latch on to bring with him, and he's got the contacts to do it. And I've heard some names floated around, but I'm not comfortable saying any of those because I don't know how factual any of that is. And then when you stand up there and you sell your vision for the future of this program as a guy that understands the people in the state of South Carolina and understands what Gamecock football has been through, what they're going through, and what he wants them to get to, that'll start to change the minds of some of the doubters.
Jamie Bradford, co-host of JB and Goldwater, joining us here on 3 and Out. Jamie, really appreciate the time. Thanks so much.
You got it, man. Y'all have a great one.
And we'll do. We appreciate it. Jamie Bradford joining us here on 3 and Out. We've got more to come all across the Southern Pigskin Radio Network.
ESPNCoastal.com, the 3 and Out podcast with BJ, Ben, and Kevin.
Am I on the air?
I got to do at least 80 and a 65. I got places to be, people to see. I'm rushing through life, but I got reason to be. This life don't wait for nobody, not even me. So I'm going to keep going to heaven's king. Call me to leave. Yeah, this the life.
Good to have you here, final hour of 3 and Out. Kevin, BJ, and Ben all across the Southern Pigskin Radio Network. We've got our Southern Power Poll coming up here in the final hour of the program. Also, some college football playoff scenarios out there as well. But first, joining us here on the program is get the latest on Georgia recruiting and more as they come down the stretch to play Vanderbilt this weekend. Jake Roos, UGASports.com, joins us here on 3 and Out. Jake, welcome to the show. How are you?
I'm doing well. Thank you guys for having me.
Now, appreciate you coming on. And before we get into the recruiting, Georgia obviously coming down the stretch of the season against Vanderbilt coming up this weekend. Is this an opportunity to see some of those guys, if you're Kirby Smart, that don't get a lot of playing time if all goes according to plan?
Yeah, absolutely. I think that this is a prime opportunity for that exact thing to happen. I think that you got a little bit of a dose of that last week against South Carolina. Broderick Jones getting his first snaps. Arian Smith gets in, scores a touchdown. Dejan Edwards with some very nice carries there. So I think that you'll see a continuation of that this week. This is a depleted Vanderbilt team. It's a team that even before all the issues they've had this season would have probably been out-talented by Georgia by a significant margin. So, with these hamstring issues that they've had, it's just kind of off the table. I don't think anybody expects it to even be a competitive game.
Do you think we'll see Stetson Bennett potentially get some more snaps at quarterback this weekend, and maybe Carson Beck?
Yeah, I think that you'll probably see, I think Stetson, is probably listed as the number two guy, but I hope you get a chance to see Beck. I really hope that he gets a chance to get out there and kind of show what he's able to do. I think that you can get a feel on whether or not he's going to be a contributor moving forward. I mean, I think most people expect and look forward to it being JT Daniels' team next year. But is Carson a guy who you can rely on back there? Or are you going to have to maybe slot Brock in as your number two guy next year? Just a lot of unknowns there. So I think it makes all the sense in the world to get the freshman some game reps.
And Jake, as you mentioned, I mean, he's obviously going to be JT Daniels' team next year. But when you look at what Georgia was able to do against South Carolina, that's kind of what I'm used to seeing Georgia being. I know that these weapons look really, really good, you know, against Mississippi State. But running the football is what I'm known Georgia to be able to do. Do you think they're going to, even though it is Vanderbilt, keep on running the football to kind of, you know, get back into that rhythm of what you know Georgia to be on offense?
Yeah, I think so. I think that, like you mentioned, that's Georgia's identity. I think Kirby Smart would be thrilled if he could win, you know, score 40-some-odd points on 16 pass attempts week in and week out. I think that that would be just fine with him. So I do think that you'll see more of that. I think that they kind of had a point to prove after coming off of that big passing performance. That was, you know, something that I think a lot of those guys up front and in the backfield kind of took to heart was, you know, people kind of writing them off and saying, you know, Georgia, oh, this is a passing team now. You know, the identity of the Bulldogs is still pounding it on the ground. They still recruit incredibly well there, and those guys have a lot of pride in what they do. So no surprise to see them go back to it, and I expect you'll get a heavy dose of it again this week.
Jake Roos, UGASports.com, joining us here on 3 and Out. Now, Jake, a couple weeks to go in the regular season. Normally, you get bowl season to deal with some recruiting things, but early signing period coming up in about 2 weeks. What does that look like, and what is Georgia thinking it's going to look like when December 16th rolls around?
Well, it's going to be interesting. You know, I mean, I think based on what guys decide to do in terms of will they sign early or won't they, I think that you know, you're expecting a majority of the class to sign early. That's just kind of become the standard, certainly. But you'll have some recruitments to watch. I know that everybody will be tuned in to Xavien Sory that day. He's a kid who I think Georgia covets very highly. Florida, Alabama, his top three, along with Georgia. You know, the Bulldogs are fighting really hard. I really need a linebacker of his caliber, and I think that he's a guy who would fill a huge need for them. You know, obviously, I think everybody's going to be watching Mason Smith and Corey Foreman, the five-star defensive linemen down the stretch. I don't know how confident I'm feeling in those races right now. Maybe a little bit more so with Mason. I think that Georgia may stand an okay chance there, but, you know, in-state LSU is always going to be tough for a guy like that. Corey Foreman seems like he's trending a little bit more back to Clemson and possibly also LSU, USC in the mix for him as well. So, you know, there's definitely going to be some intrigue surrounding the day, I think. I think that, you know, there will be stuff to tune into. But, you know, a lot of the haze in the barn for the Bulldogs, they're waiting out some big fish. But you've got a pretty good idea of how this class is going to look.
With all of the uncertainty in terms of roster numbers, do you think that this will be about it for Georgia in terms of recruiting with the early signing period, or will they have a couple of spots open heading into 2021?
I'll tell you this. I've made this projection a couple of times, and I'm always wrong, so I'm not gonna do it again this year. You know, Kirby Smart to me is a guy who wants to fill those. He wants to fill it out every year. He wants 25 guys. He's going to take transfers. He's all about roster management. So I fully expect, as long as he's at the helm of Georgia, and I don't know how he makes the numbers work. I don't know how they, you know, move scholarships around or guys move on or whatever. But I fully expect that you'll see Georgia take as close to 25 as they absolutely possibly can.
And Jake, how is he managing the fact that this year, I mean, you get another year of eligibility? Obviously, when you talk about guys playing the University of Georgia, that's going to be one of the best resume boosters if you're trying to look good for the next level. But as you mentioned, I mean, they've been in the top five, top one or two the last 2 years talking about recruiting, and it's all about the current crop that's coming in. But the current crop you have got another year. Everybody's not going to be big-time draft picks. So how do you think they're going to manage that with trying to keep the guys who want to come back while also welcoming the guys who they're recruiting right now?
Well, it'll be a bit of a juggling act. I think that you'll have to sell those younger guys on the experience factor and the opportunity to learn under some of those guys. But simultaneously, I do think that there are some guys who will end up testing the NFL waters who – probably, you know, may not have quite the resume that people think they should in order to do that. Two guys who really jump off the page to me, I think, are Zamir White and James Cook. You know, no definitive decisions have been made there, but I think that's just the nature of running back in the game of football nowadays. The clock's ticking on those guys. Zamir White obviously suffered two brutal knee injuries. You know, it feels like maybe it's an opportunity now for him to do what he's always wanted to do and take that step. So we'll see how that goes. I'll be intrigued to watch that. Like you said, it's a bit of a balancing act, certainly. But I think that the kids that are coming in don't have any fear of those ahead of them. And the guys who are already on the roster aren't going to be scared of some freshmen. So it'll make for some good competition. And I trust Kirby Smart can juggle it pretty easily.
Well, I mean, obviously Georgia's going to have more guys probably thinking about NFL than most programs. But how do you think that do we just see a splash of a tidal wave in the transfer portal? Because as far as I remember reading, I haven't seen the NCAA say, hey, for a year we can bump you up to 90 scholarships. How do you make all that math work? Maybe a little easier at Georgia with guys wanting to go to the NFL. But do you think we'll see just a splash or a tidal wave of guys jumping in that transfer portal because teams are trying to make room?
I think that's possible. You know, the seniors are getting an exemption. They won't count against your 85, so that's going to be big for everybody in terms of managing numbers. So you're those returning seniors, you don't have to worry about that as much. But I do think that you'll see some transfer portal action, and I think that that'll extend not only into this offseason, but moving forward. I think that there are huge ramifications to come out of this year in terms of the transfer portal. You know, you're going to have a lot of guys, I think, who have taken on – commitments or committed to teams that they may not be super familiar with or they may not have spent a lot of time with. And I think that those guys are, in a lot of cases, going to end up reconsidering. I think that you're going to have guys who end up at smaller programs who could probably play at larger programs. You'll see some of that transfer. I think that, you know, the implications of this year are going to be far-reaching beyond just this next recruiting cycle. I think that you're going to be feeling it for 2-3 years in the transfer portal off of this.
Finally, speaking of the portal, with DeJuan Mathis, do you have any kind of early inclinations as to what schools, if there are any, he may be wanting to potentially go to? And what do you think his kind of projection is as he moves forward as a college quarterback?
Well, you know, I think DeJuan's got to go somewhere where he's going to have a legitimate chance to, kind of get through some of the bumps. You know, I think Georgia's in such a win-now mode, or was at the time when they pulled him, that, you know, I just think that that was a big detriment to his confidence. But I think moving forward, you know, he's a kid who can benefit from a lot of reps. He's certainly a big athlete. He's got a great arm. You know, it's an accuracy thing and a confidence thing, if you ask me. So I think that, you know, if he finds the right fit, I think that he's got a chance to turn his career around. And, you know, no early indications on in terms of interest, but I would watch out for Michigan State there. I think that that makes a lot of sense for all parties involved. Mel Tucker there, so there's a connection to the Georgia program, and that's much closer to his home in Oak Park, Michigan. So that would make a great deal of sense to me. I think Sparty would be a good fit, but no clear indicators early on.
Sports.com, our guest here on 3 and Out. Jake, we appreciate the time.
Thank you, guys.
Appreciate it. Jake Roos, UGASports.com, joining us here. And again, early signing period coming up December 16th through December 18th, and then that December 19th Saturday when a lot of conferences have their conference championship game set for as well. So a lot of interesting duty for guys maybe like Dabo Swinney, Nick Saban, others trying to get that early signing period done as well as get ready for a conference championship game in just a couple of short days. So I'll be interested to watch that as we get closer. More to come here on 3 and Out all across the Southern Pigskin Radio Network.
This is your 3 and Out podcast on ESPN Coastal. ESPNCoastal.com.
Pain heals. Chicks dig scars. Glory lasts forever.
Good to have you along here on 3 and Out all across the Southern Pigskin Radio Network. Kevin Thomas, BJ Bennett, Ben Troop, thanks for making us a part of your day. Streaming live, ESPNCoastal.com. As we come down the stretch a couple of weeks ago in the regular season, our Southern Power Poll here for now in December. BJ and Ben, lay it on us. What you got?
All right, yeah, not a ton of change in recent weeks for me. I have Alabama number one, the Crimson Tide obviously playing just elite vintage football. They don't look like they're slowing down anytime soon. I have Clemson too, and I'm sticking with that. I know Clemson beat Notre Dame, but I still think Clemson is a better team than Notre Dame. Now, the Fighting Irish are probably tired of hearing that. They'll get their chance in a couple of weeks to beat Trevor Lawrence in Clemson, and looking forward to that matchup. Should be fun. I have Notre Dame 3. Very impressed with the offensive evolution of Notre Dame, right? The past couple of Notre Dame teams that we've seen make it to the national championship kind of conversation, really good defensively, really good at running the football, not able to throw the football. And that includes Ian Book's team from a couple of years ago. He's been great this season, and he's playing his best football of his career right now. He's a difference maker, so I go Notre Dame 3. Florida for me 4. Defensively, still some concerns, but my heavens, this offense is unstoppable. Dan Mullen is pressing all the right buttons. Kyle Trask is spectacular. Kyle Pitts, 3 more touchdowns. Kadarius Toney had a punt return for a touchdown. So I'll go Florida 4. A&M for me 5. I know they're in the top 5 in the coaches' poll. That just doesn't quite feel right to me. Not that they shouldn't be there, but they don't look and feel like a traditional top 5 team to me. Really good team, great defensively. Still have some questions about Kellen Mond, but they got a puncher's chance at the playoff. I have Georgia 6. I was so glad to see the Dogs run the football against South Carolina and run it with authority. 3-4 backs getting in there doing work. I have Miami coming in at number 7. We've kind of forgotten about the Canes. We haven't seen them in so long, but still a very good team that only lost to Clemson. Man, after that, it's kind of a mixed bag. You know, I could go Coastal Carolina. I'm going to go Auburn. I do think Auburn's played a really difficult schedule and is probably a little better than their record indicates. For me, Coastal Carolina comes in at 9. And I don't know if folks could say, well, Auburn just got blown out. Look, I'm not going to not rank a team rank a team a spot or two higher because they got blown out by Alabama. Everybody gets blown out by Alabama, so that doesn't bother me. I'll stick with Auburn at 8. Coastal Carolina for me at 9. And then game day going to be in Myrtle Beach this weekend for Coastal Carolina and Liberty. Louisiana, I have them at 10. In North Carolina, I'll keep at 11. Lost to Notre Dame, but they're still a good team, not a great team. And then impressed with what Dave Doran has done at NC State. I'm going to keep them at 12. They've overcome a lot of injuries. So not a ton of change, but Alabama won for me and Clemson over Notre Dame.
Yeah, my top 4 is just like yours, BJ. Alabama number 1 for everything you just said. Najee Harris, Devonta Smith, Mac Jones, they've been putting on the clinic, and this defense has gotten better. I mean, you know, since that Georgia game, they really found their way. When you talk about just going out there playing stifling defense, Clemson is number 2. I know they got beat by Notre Dame, but listen, no Trevor Lawrence, still had to go to overtime. They're still my number 2 team. My number 3 is Notre Dame, BJ. When you look at this offense, I know we say a lot about this offense and that running game. Ian Book is really, really playing some really, really good football right now. Was able to get over the hump to be the top 5 team, him and Brian Kelly, so I got to give him a lot of credit. Florida number 4, but Dan Mullen is getting his offense going. I think that, you didn't see Kyle Pitts for 2 games. I mean, he came back last game, 3 touchdowns. Kyle Trask just find a way to move, you know, spread the ball around, you know, to all the receivers. The Kadarius Toney getting in the act, as you mentioned, with the punt return. My number 5 is Texas A&M. They didn't look impressive on Saturday. They're one of those teams to where, did they play their best game, but did they peak against Florida? I would say yes, but they have only lost 1 game. You got to give them a lot of credit. My number 6 is a team you haven't seen for a little over a month, and that's Miami. I mean, you haven't seen those guys, but they only lost to Clemson. You got to respect that. Manny Diaz and the De'Aaron King project is working. My number 7 is Georgia. Got back to what they do last week, running the football against South Carolina. JT Daniels ain't putting up, you know, ridiculous type numbers to have people going crazy saying they finally got their quarterback. My number 8 is Coastal Carolina. For everything you just said, BJ, they undefeated. I mean, when you look at the state of South Carolina, there's only 1 team in South Carolina that is undefeated, and that would be the boys from Coastal Carolina and Myrtle Beach. Game day will be there. That might be the game of the week. Liberty and Coastal Carolina should be a really, really good game. My number 9 is North Carolina. I mean, the thing about North Carolina is they're good enough to beat anybody, but they kind of play, you know, below themselves sometimes. I mean, I know when you look at that offense, they want to try to go out there and light up. That defense is a little bit rough. My number 10 is the NC State. I mean, BJ, you talk about the fact that the ACC is an ACC in itself. North Carolina State has had a really good season, man, despite, not really giving you that heroic effort week in and week out, but really, really good season thus far. My number 11 is Auburn. I mean, I don't like it. Because the whole thing about it is you are who you are on the day that you play. And the thing is, they got the brakes beat off them by Auburn, Alabama, but they also got beat by a South Carolina team that don't even got a coach. And rounding out is, I'm going to go with Ole Miss. I mean, the Egg Bowl still means a lot to me. I just think that when you look at a team that had not big expectations this year, finding a way to go out there and do it with offense. I like what Lane Kiffin is building, even though, you know, I'm kind of disappointed in the Mississippi State boys. But, yeah, Alabama, Clemson, Notre Dame, Florida, Texas A&M, Miami, Georgia, Coastal Carolina, UNC, North Carolina State, Auburn, and them boys from Ole Miss.
All right. Mine's not going to look too much dissimilar from you guys, BJ and Ben. I got Alabama 1, Notre Dame 2. Hate it. Got to put that in parentheses because, again, rent a school in the ACC this year. Don't like putting them in the Southern Power Poll, but there they are, number 2. Clemson at number 3, Texas A&M 4, Florida 5. So pretty similar to what some of you guys have there as well. Georgia is my number 6. Miami as my number 7. I think that top 7, to me, pretty solid, and pretty much everybody would have those 7 sitting right there. That bottom half is where it gets pretty interesting. My number 8, yeah, Dave Doran, NC State. You won. The other team spiked the ball on fourth down. He was so ecstatic. He showed teeth. It was amazing. But NC State, they're at number 8 for me. 9, Auburn. I still put them up there ahead of these next couple of teams. I think they're still, even though with the losses, a little bit better. Coastal Carolina is my 10. I think they've got a chance to continue to show and prove it out with Liberty this weekend. College game day is going to be there. How do you handle all that distraction? My number 11, Louisiana. And then number 12, oh, how they have fallen throughout the year, North Carolina. Every big game they have played seemingly have not answered the call there at the end of the day. So I put North Carolina number 12 in my Southern Power Poll. And, of course, you can go to southernpigskin.com later and get the full composite Southern Power Poll rankings there as well. But BJ, you and I were talking during the commercial break about this Notre Dame thing because you're like, did the ACC just gift Notre Dame into the ACC championship game? No, I'm saying, but I've got some clarification on that in the poorly worded release of the ACC, from what I can gather reading elsewhere, because Clemson, Florida State is not going to get made up, right? That would leave Clemson with only 9 conference games. Thus, they moved it down so that Notre Dame will only play 9 conference games and Miami will get credit for 9 conference games, how they'll be evaluated. Therefore, it doesn't matter what happens to Notre Dame on Saturday with Syracuse. They would still hold tiebreakers and thus be in the ACC championship game. So that's right. That's what happened.
Okay, see, I was trying to process all this. Right. And what I was trying to ask myself is...
But that was poorly worded in the release. It was not kind of spelled out like that.
Yeah, did Notre Dame just clinch a spot in the ACC championship game on a Tuesday? And I guess the correct answer to that is yes, although it was done so that Notre Dame, I guess Miami and Clemson, Notre Dame and Clemson specifically, both have kind of the same conference. So basically this is Florida State's fault. Like Florida State messes up everything.
Yes, well, it's also Dabo's fault because he was adamant, like, if we're going to play, we're not going to go back to Tallahassee. And I think even Bronco Mendenhall came out and said, like, hey, no, we're not going back to Tallahassee. We don't want to – if they want to play us, they can come here and play.
Yeah, so just to kind of get through all of that, and I'm not necessarily disagreeing with the reasoning. I'm just – the Notre Dame-Wake Forest game was just canceled.
Correct.
Like, Notre Dame and Wake Forest, Notre Dame, as of this morning, had 2 ACC games remaining.
That is correct.
Which at least in theory – meant, even though very unlikely, that they would lose to both Syracuse and Wake Forest. But if they did and Miami were to correspondingly win out, Miami would then play Clemson in the ACC championship game if that unlikely scenario would have unfolded. Now that Notre Dame-Wake Forest has been canceled to create scheduling equity between Notre Dame and Clemson, Miami has thus been eliminated because Notre Dame has the Clemson tiebreaker. So in essence, Notre Dame clinched a spot in the ACC title game on a Tuesday.
And Clemson would have the tiebreaker over Miami as well. So
right.
I mean, listen, the ACC – no, I'm not blaming the ACC. Let me not – Notre Dame,
I mean, look, it's a very tough set of circumstances.
It is a very tough set of circumstances.
I'm just saying it's strange to say out loud.
And I'm going to say this. As soon as Notre Dame beat Clemson, ACC said yes. Because now we can go ahead and make these decisions, and people are going to say, oh, man, if it was NC State right now doing what North Carolina, Notre Dame, they're playing. People going back to Tallahassee.
All right, let me ask this. Let me ask this because this is a question Kevin will love as we debate the deep issues in college football.
Well, here it is. Clemson needs to beat Virginia Tech this weekend, and that puts them in. But Notre Dame, if they lose, still holds the tiebreaker. So on a 9-game schedule, they would be in. I'm trying to clarify for you.
No, but hold on. No, but let me ask you this, Kevin, because this is if Clemson beats Virginia Tech, we expect that to happen.
Right.
Yep. If Notre Dame beats Syracuse, we expect that to happen. And then you have Clemson, Notre Dame. Well, I guess if Clemson were to lose, but in essence, you're kind of creating an ACC title game that doesn't matter if it goes the way people think.
Well, no, but here's the thing. They're judging it down on a 9-game schedule, right? So Clemson beat Miami.
Yeah, I get it.
So if Notre Dame loses, they'll have one loss, right? Clemson will have one loss. It will be to the team ahead of them. So Notre Dame is automatically in.
Yeah.
If Virginia Tech beats Clemson this week, Clemson will have two league losses in their 9 ACC games. Miami would need to win and thus could jump over Clemson, and it would be Notre Dame-Miami.
Oh, boy. Okay. All right.
That's why Clemson hasn't clinched yet.
Hold on.
And so Clemson hasn't clinched.
Hold on. But this is what y'all not factoring in, though. If Florida wins this weekend, there is 0% chance they're going to play 10 games. You know why? Because they're going to want to compare 9-9. So Florida wins this weekend.
Yeah, but – this is what I'm getting at with Kevin, because Kevin always laughs at games that don't matter in the era of every game mattering. In the SEC and ACC championship games, it will not matter for Alabama or Notre Dame. It won't matter.
No.
Every game matters.
No, Alabama and Notre Dame.
That's what all the playoff people say.
Once Notre Dame beat Clemson in the regular season, they was good. Like that's all they had to do. Think about this. Clemson has to win the next two games, and Notre Dame don't.
They have to win their final game this week and then the ACC championship game.
Notre Dame looking at Clemson like, hey, man, y'all better get y'all a touchdown, Jesus. We don't need no Hill.
And Notre Dame is running the ACC, and they're about to see you in a couple of weeks.
Notre Dame is running the ACC right now.
Hey, maybe they'll be able to pull them back. I don't know. But, yes, Notre Dame has clinched. Clemson has not at this point. I will leave it. And apparently, I saw this online, BJ, Northwestern has clinched a Big Ten title game on a similar kind of technicality in terms of number of games played.
And Ohio State might not meet the game threshold to even play.
Yes, they might not be eligible because they can't play enough games.
You gotta love college football. Woo!
It's 2020, baby. Every game matters. We got more to come. 3 and Out all across the Southern Pigskin Radio Network.